Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Hey.
Well, since Shannon already answered the phone, welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Let's go ahead and get Shannon Rich on the phone. I tell you what, if it wasn't for the last 2 days and technical difficulties, I don't know what I would do.
Hey, it's Shannon.
Hey, Shannon, this is Don McGuire with The Fighter's Voice. Man, I tell you what, if it wasn't for the last 2 days and technical difficulties and me screwing up time zones, bro, I feel like a chicken that truly needs to pull his head out of his behind. But ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we've got Mr. International, Shannon Rich. How's it going, my friend?
Hey, it's going good, man. I'm out here in beautiful Arizona at the 500 Club playing some golf, hitting the balls, man, just getting ready for my next fight.
Yeah, man, you got to send me pictures. I'm here stuck in a studio, and you're out there on the golf course, you know, kind of got to rub it in just a little bit. You know, I'm kind of glad last night worked out the way it did. I had no idea that Arizona was on Pacific Standard Time. You know, most people don't, you know, they think we got three time zones. In reality, there's like five or six, you know, because you got to count Hawaii, Alaska, and, you know, mountain. And, God, it just gets confusing. But we finally got you on here. A lot of people wanted to have you on the show. And it's my honor to bring you back on because, you know, you truly have been a brother in life. And what you're doing is tremendous. Shannon, when you look at what has been put in front of you with this documentary with HBO telling the life and times of Shannon Rich, what does it truly mean to you as a veteran of the sport, one that's put in the hard work, the determination, not just in MMA, but in bare-knuckle fighting and all aspects of Shannon Rich?
Well, you know, it gives me a chance to let people know my true story. I mean, some people know me as an actor. Some people know me just from my military career. Some people know me just from MMA fighting. I mean, now it gives me an opportunity to show all the hats that I wear. So it's actually really cool, man. It's an honor. It really is.
Yeah, you know, it kind of got to be humbling, wouldn't you say? I mean, you look at all the hard work and all. I mean, you've been around since the sport basically began.
1991, man, right prior to UFC, yeah.
Yeah, so when you look at it that way, you know, this is truly an honor, a privilege for Shannon Rich. You know, I had one other individual on my show that they were doing a documentary about, and he had been in the sport almost just as long as you. And that was Tony Kryptonite Lopez. They're going to be doing
a little
documentary on him. You know, when I look at warriors like you two, and you two example are a fine example, you know, you're not afraid of anybody. You're willing to take a fight on a moment's notice. You're willing to get out there and do whatever it takes necessary to keep the sport evolving. What part in the warrior mentality of Shannon Rich has you not shying away from fights like a lot of fighters do, having to take fights on a moment's notice and still be a relevant part of the sport, even though you've been in it since the turn of time, brother?
you know, honestly, man, it's trying to stay injury-free, and, you know, that's just what fighters do. I mean, the fighters of old, you know, myself, Tony Lopez, or Travis Fulton, you know, the Jeremy Horn, guys like that, you know, we fought anybody, anywhere, anytime in a moment's notice. It's not like the prima donnas now where they need, you know, they need 10 weeks for a fight camp. They need a crazy amount of money. It just boggles my mind that some of these guys won't take a fight if a guy's half a pound overweight. I mean, we were talking about when we started fighting, there were no weight classes. It's just crazy how it's all evolved.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of people don't realize that I've been along for this almost this entire ride. I've been around, I think, since UFC 3. And, you know, me and Dan Mergliotta, when he was on my show one time, we talked about it. It was because it's pathetic the way we look at it now. We used to pay for our own airfare travel to the event, buy a ticket to get into the event, pay for our own hotel, everything, for an event that we were hired with hopes that we would get paid. And when we didn't get paid, it didn't bother us because we knew that we were part of something new and something that intrigued us and was the growth of who we were, because I transitioned from boxing into MMA. So,
right.
You know, when you look at it that way, you talk about no weight classes and all that aspect of it. What was it that made the passion grow for Shannon Rich that kept you in a sport that was in its infancy when you got into it?
You know, it was always about testing myself. You know, I was a martial artist, and then I did kickboxing. I was a professional kickboxer, and I wrestled ever since I was a little kid. So it was always about testing myself. It was never about the money, although the money's fun, and it is fun to travel and stuff like that. But, I mean, it was always about just testing myself. Hey, there's a guy standing in front of you, bigger, smaller, stronger, faster, quicker, you know, whatever. There's a guy standing in front of you. He wants to rip your head off. Can you defend yourself in front of this guy? And it was always about that. And I think the sport has evolved and became a sport, and now that mentality is gone. Now it's all about the money, making a good record, never losing a fight, trying, you know, I see these guys that fight, you know, and they get one or two losses and they retire. What the hell, man, dude, I've lost 16 in a row. Never even thought about quitting, you know, because I always wanted to test myself, come back bigger, stronger, better, faster. So that was what it was always about, just testing myself.
Yeah, you truly have, because not only a lot of people don't really look into the career of Shannon Rich, and if you did, you would see a tremendous warrior, because not only are you in the MMA aspect, the jiu-jitsu aspect, but, you know, I believe, was it last year that you were inducted into the Hall of Fame for bare-knuckle boxing?
Yeah, last year I was inducted into the Hall of Fame for bare-knuckle boxing Hall of Fame. There's a big Hall of Fame in New York. And, you know, that was a huge honor. It's actually where John L. Sullivan trained. And, you know, a lot of people don't know about John L. Sullivan, but he was, you know, one of the first boxers prior to glove boxing. I mean, they were doing bare-knuckle boxing. I have a professional record of 25 wins by knockout. June 9th, I'm going to the O2 Arena in London, England, and I'll be fighting bare-knuckle boxing over there. So I'll get to fight some of the UK guys. And, you know, I'm always testing myself. It's this Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Last year I won Worlds Gi and No Gi 2017 in Los Angeles. So it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or kickboxing or MMA or bare-knuckle boxing or fighting in Burma doing Burmese kickboxing, which is called left way. I mean, it doesn't matter what the sport is. I'm always trying to test myself.
Yeah. What is it about Shannon Rich, the man, when you look in the mirror, that had you at such a young age and still continuing to this day, that makes you want to test yourself? Because like you said, a lot of fighters get stuck 6-7 fights in. They want to retire. They truly don't know what the sport is about. When they do find out, they run with a tail between their legs. But what has kept Shannon Rich involved even at the age you are today, sir?
Well, see, for me, it was all about growing up as being bullied. I was the smallest kid in school. I literally got picked on every single day. I cried probably every day. I had thoughts of suicide. I mean, kids were telling me they were going to kill me. They were going to beat me up. I mean, I was that little scared kid. And it got to a point where I wanted to know I could defend myself. And so I started taking martial arts, and I started wrestling. And even to this day, there's still something in the back of my head that it's like I have to prove something to myself that I'm not a kid that can be bullied. I hate bullying. I hate that feeling of somebody, you know, can pick on you. And so what it is, you know, it's just something inside me. When I look in the mirror, it's like no one is ever going to pick on me again. I'm going to be able to defend myself.
Yeah, you know, and I love that aspect. You know, I had Pat Miletich on my show, and he's been on several times. Pat's a brother in life. And he kind of is like you in a lot of ways. If you look at the sport, you're old school, you're compassionate about what you do, and you've got that winning pride. And you know, perseverance is one thing that I think of when I think of Shannon Rich. But Pat Miletich, you know, came on my show. Brother, he blew my mind because he talked about what life as a child and bullying aspect and this and that. But then he also talked about he had two younger brothers who were molested by a Catholic priest, and they ended up committing suicide. And so he felt the burden of his mother's loss on his shoulders. So walking into UFC 15, he had loaded a gun and put it in the drawer and told himself, if I don't win this belt tonight, I'm going to blow my head off. You know, when you hear icons and legends of the sport tell stories of such, You know, how hard was it for Shannon Rich to overcome adversity through all the, you know, trial and error in your life where you're at today?
You know, I don't even think you ever overcome it. I think it's a daily struggle, and you have to just deal with it. You know what I mean? And some people deal with it by drinking alcohol. Some people deal with it by, you know, eating. There are some people that deal with it by getting in the gym and working out. I mean, it's just, you have to find your outlet. You have to figure out a way to deal with it and not let it consume you. In the sport of MMA, people don't realize the depression that goes with the highs and lows of the sport. I mean, you're only as good as your last fight. And if you can't honestly deal with that and the people and the haters, I mean, because you can be the top guy in the world. You know, Tito Ortiz, you know, prime example, Tito Ortiz was one of the best fighters in the UFC. He was their poster boy. And he loses a fight, and everybody's on his tail, and they're saying he's horrible, and, you know, he should retire. And, I mean, at the time, he was one of the best guys. I mean, he could be Conor McGregor, for example. Super athlete, fundamentally sound. He's a great guy. And if he loses, then people, you know, say he's horrible and stuff. I mean, but you have to be able to deal with the haters in life and, you know, just deal with it and cope and figure out a way to deal with it without committing suicide, because it's very rampant. And dealing with that depression is a big deal.
Yeah, it truly is. You know, to my listeners on iHeart and Univision, if it sounds like Shannon's a little mumbled just a little bit here and there, it's because of the wind, and he is on the golf course, but it's due to my error. He was supposed to be on the show last night, and I brought him on today because I couldn't figure out the time zone. So, you know, we'll just deal with the audio a little bit. You know, Shannon, one thing that truly has inspired me, you know, you're one that gives back to the sport tenfold. You've created Shannon Rich BJJ. What is it in the aspect of Shannon Rich that wanted him to give back to the youth of today and wants to see them, you know, find their passion and create success through you and to them?
Well, I'm kind of just doing what somebody did for me. I started doing traditional karate under Heidi Ochai's Watching Ru, traditional hard style Japanese karate under Ty Morgan. And, you know, if it wasn't for him, I don't know how my life would have been. And then training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under Dan Gonzalez and Carlos Machado. Again, I wouldn't know how my life would be if I wasn't, you know, around them and learned the things I did learn from them. So I started training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu so I could give back to the kids. And, you know, hopefully I'm doing a good job, setting a good role model. And, you know, my kids are going out there, they're winning. Sometimes they lose, but you have to learn how to be a good winner and a good loser, and that's what I try to teach everybody.
Yeah. Now, Shannon, I don't know if somebody is, because I got a few calls on the board. I don't know if people are calling in to ask you questions, but I always leave it up to my guest, you know, if they want a caller brought on the air, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, let me deal with it. That's the deal.
Oh, caller, you're live on the air with the Fighter's Voice and Shannon Rich. How can I help you?
My privilege. My name is Ron Abernathy, and you're talking about royalty there when you say Shannon Rich. He's the only unofficial U.S. ambassador to Russia, and Trump is missing out because that man has established the kind of relationship that diplomats, ambassadors thrive, would kill to have. He does it because it's out of the goodness of his heart to go there and exchange not only a cultural aspect, as well as an athletic aspect, but the human aspect. He's kind of like a Pied Piper over there. I don't know, Don, I applaud your initiative for having the podcast, and also you're part of the traditional aspect of martial arts. I belong to a thing called SCARS for the last 20 years. So martial arts has been a part of my life. But what is most important, you two gentlemen are sharing an experience. And I'm speaking for myself, but it is kind of priceless because you can tune into 1,000 podcasts and like hubcaps all over the place. But what you've done is you've made a contribution to your listeners. And I'm coming back for more thanks to Shannon Rich, because I didn't know about this until he alerted me that he was going to have this particular opportunity today. So I will shut up. I just wanted to say I'm grateful to be a listener, and you've got an additional follower. Thanks to Shannon.
Hey, no problem. You know, Shannon, would you like to say anything?
No, Ron's a good guy. Ron is. I've known him for several years, and definitely learned a lot with him. And the guy is a consultant for many, many things. You know, he was with the Bush family. He was with the Clinton family. The Obamas. Ron Abernathy is just a man of men. Thanks for calling in, Ron.
I'm going to go ahead and leave you on to listen if you want. I'll just go ahead and mute you, and you can listen to the show. Thank you for your call. You know, Shannon, one thing that is astounding, you know, I believe it's just this June you're going to be fighting in the O2 Arena. You know, I look back to my last guest that was at the O2 Arena, and that was Jacob Stitch Duran. He was a cut man for Vladimir Klitschko.
Yes.
And he talked about there's nothing in the world like walking out at Wembley Stadium. What will that moment mean to Shannon Rich?
You know, that's a pinnacle of my career. It's kind of like when I fought in Pride. You know, at the time, Pride was the Super Bowl of MMA. It was the World Series. I mean, it was the pinnacle. Well, in bare-knuckle boxing, you fight at the O2 Arena in London. That means you've made it. You have arrived. So, to me, that is it's truly an honor. And I'll be going over there with one of my partners. His name is Big Joe Mack. Joe Mack is a cut man. He's a historian of bare-knuckle boxing. He knows everything about it. And I wouldn't be where I'm at without Big Joe Mack. So big shout out to him for going with me. Man, it's just gonna be amazing. Get to go over there, fight bare-knuckle boxing, do what I do, love what I do, and I'm living the dream.
Yeah, most definitely. But you know me, Shannon. I'm gonna throw that elephant in the room question. What in the hell is up with Bobby Gunn?
No, I don't even want to talk about that guy because I'm done with Gunn. The guy refused to fight me. He goes out. He is self-proclaimed 71-0 undefeated bare knuckle boxing champion. You know, from what I've heard, you know, through the grapevine and through the rumor mill, is that he pays guys to fight him, taxi cab drivers, you know, whatever. The guy is a fraud. He would not sign the contract when I had it there in front of him. We were going to fight on pay-per-view. I had a venue. I had pay-per-view. I had money. I had everything. He refused to fight me. So for a man who refuses to fight you when all the thing is laid out, all I can say is I'm done with Gunn.
You know, I remember when we first initially had you on the show. Well, we had you on before prior, but when we brought you on to talk about that, how articulated and amped up you were, and you can just hear the passion in Shannon Rich. So it's an atrocity that people like this exist, you know. And, you know, I may piss some people off with what I'm going to say, but, Shannon, you know, in life I'm transparent. I'll say it on my show as I will in life, and I'll say it to their face. You know, I think Floyd Mayweather, you know, Jr. was a tremendous, you know, fighter coming up. I think, but you look at the latter part of his career, I think, you know, he got that Bobby Gunn mentality. Now he wants to cross over to MMA, and I think it's a joke. You know, I see the sport being turned more and more into entertainment. A lot of people say, you know, but that's the way it needs to go to survive. You know, I asked a fighter one time, okay, how content, because he was bumped off of a card for CM Punk to be put on. I said, how content, you know, are you with being bumped off the main card and losing, you know, purse money and fight bonus money to you know, allow CM Punk to come from the WWE and take your spot? He said, I'm cool with it because him and Conor McGregor are going to be putting more money in our pockets. You know, and I sat back and I laughed because, to me, he's taking money from you. So then I asked him, I said, okay, how content will you be 4 or 5 fights in, when you're continuously being bumped? Then next thing you know, you're not even on the card anymore because you got all these transition fighters. When you look at the sport nowadays, Shannon, comparative to the sport that you grew up in and loved, how different is it, and do you believe that the WWE theatrics is going to save the sport or harm the sport?
I think it's going to harm the sport, man, because it's not the true fighters of yesteryear of what it was. I mean, now it's a circus. CM Punk coming from WWE to fight MMA, well, I'm cool with that. That is cool, but he needs to be fighting in the smaller shows, the Gladiator Challenges, the King of the Cages, the Hook and Shoots, you know, the Bellator, you know, just smaller shows, not the UFC right out of the gate. being on a main card. And then if you looked at him, he didn't even look like a pro. He looked like an amateur. I mean, he's never had a pro MMA fight, and they give him a fight. There's guys like Tony Lopez who is busting his ass, winning belts after belts all over the United States and the world, and the UFC won't even give this guy a chance. So to me, that's a slap in the face to real fighters. There's many guys like Tony Lopez who grinded it out and never got their shot in the UFC. And to me, that's a travesty.
Yeah, you know, considering Tony just won another belt, and I think it was rough this last weekend.
Yeah,
you know,
Arizona.
Tony's
he just fought in my home state. Tony just kicked the shit out of a guy out here, and that wasn't the first time he did it. I mean, Tony is out there fighting. I fought Tony. Tony beat me. I mean, Tony's a badass. And you know what? The guy deserves a shot in the UFC.
Yeah, he truly does. You know, and the sad thing about it is I've been having Tony on my show since before Bully Beatdowns. I mean, so it gives you a little idea of how long I've known Tony. And, you know, I've watched his career, and he's like you. And this is one thing I understand the warrior mentality because I'm an ex-fighter who lost my leg and had to pick up a camera to continue my passion. But what is it about, like, you know, people like you and Tony Lopez that will fight every 3 days or every 5 days, whatever the commission will allow them? What is it about your mentality?
Because
we
are true professional MMA fighters. This is how we make our living. We fight. These guys that fight once a year, to me, that's not a pro fighter. That's a part-time fighter. He's got another job. You know, he gets these guys that are firemen, police officers. Oh, fuck, they might even work in a gym or work in McDonald's. I don't know. But they're not pro MMA fighters that are doing this solely to make a living. That's how I made my living for several years, is I was fighting every single weekend. Every weekend. Win, lose, or draw. That's how I put money on the table.
Yeah, you know, it's just, it goes back to how I believe life should be: pride, passion, and perseverance. When Shannon Rich hears those three words, what would you say best describes you in that aspect through pride, passion, and perseverance, not just as a warrior, but as a man, Shannon?
Dedication, desire, and determination, the three Ds. You got to have that. If you don't have that, you better go find it. Because that's how you're going to make it in life, not only in MMA, but in life. You got to have dedication, determination, and desire. The three Ds, that's what I live by, man. You know, I was in the military. I'm a former military. I spent time in Iraq as a bodyguard for the United States Ambassador in Iraq. And that's how I survived. That's you got to have the desire and determination and dedication.
Yes. Yeah, that is so true. You know, as your friend said earlier, you know, I've been a part of your life for quite some time now. You've been coming on my show for, I think, about 3 years now. But the thing of it is, you know, I knew you before my show, but the thing of it is, the atmosphere in Russia, you know, you see the transition of you start going over there. But not only did you go over there as a warrior, but as your friend said, you truly went over there as an ambassador. You created a friendship with many over there, unlike any other fighters, and you truly have set a precedence, because after you started going over there, because you know I'm deep in the sport, I started noticing more and more fighters transitioning to Russia, more and more, you know, aspects being put into the sport. And then you look at ACBs coming over here now, and you look at all of that. How does it feel for people to look at Shannon and Rich and feel that you've done more as an ambassador than you have for the sport between the two countries?
You know, I used MMA as a bridge, and it's really just a bridge to bring fighters from Russia to the United States, from the United States to Russia, also with China and Japan. I'm an advocate. You know, I've been going over to China here recently, and I'm trying to bring fighters over from China to America and American fighters over to China. Same with London, England. You know, I'm the one that sent Josh Burns over there. I still went to Melvin Gillard. I sent Joe Riggs. I'm the one who bridged that gap and, you know, made it possible for a lot of fighters to have opportunities. And, I'm not the best fighter in the world, but I want people to realize that I have been part of the sport and helped people out more than a lot of people know. You know, behind-the-scenes stuff that people probably wouldn't have gotten fights and opportunities if it wasn't for Shannon making some phone calls. But, you know, it's not about me. It's about the sport, and the sport is bigger than me, and the sport's going to be going on longer after I'm gone. I just want to, you know, be able to say I made a contribution to the sport up into me.
Me Yeah, well, you truly have. And now, you know, we've talked about legacies before, and you've created a legacy for yourself and for your family in many different aspects. But what is this documentary truly going to mean to Shannon Rich, you know, as...
Well, the documentary is legitimately going to have, you know, everyone has seen The Smashing Machine with Mark Kerr. I mean, we're going to get into some stuff that maybe people don't really want to talk about, but it needs to be said. And, you know, it's going to be some controversy and some names being dropped and stories told. And it's real life, man. It's, you know, Shannon the Cannon Rich, unarmed and dangerous. I got a lot of cool stories. And, you know, I hope it's entertaining for a lot of people to watch.
I feel it will be. You know, I hope you don't mind me saying this, Shannon. I thought I did a lot in the sport, but you make me feel like I haven't done shit. I mean, you know, see, people just take me as Don McGuire, the UFC Bellator Invicta photographer, and Don McGuire, the journalist, but they don't see that I help match make cards. I had a squad of 32 fighters myself at one point in time, so I've done management. I still help in all aspects, and people don't realize that once you come on my show, if I pull you on my show, I'm not done with you, you know, because
right.
I believe in past, present, and future. And, you know, I bring a lot of the people say, well, you can bring legends on all the time, but that isn't how I roll in life, man. I think if we don't share the future, then it's only going to degrade and hurt the sport. And you know what? I've put too many years of my life into this sport not to share the future. You know, I had a young kid on last night by the name of Charles Rodriguez. He's an amateur right now. He's set to fight his first pro fight in Glory Kickboxing. And I asked him, I said, you know, what did it mean? What does it mean to you to be able to, you know, in 2 weeks you're going to be fighting in Glory 52? He said, I don't want to talk about it. And it kind of caught me off guard, bro. And I was like, what do you mean you don't want to talk about it? And he's like, well, I haven't done it yet. He said, ask me after my fight. And he said, you know, but he said, I look at life as you're only as good as your next fight. He said, a lot of people say you're only as good as your last fight, but I think you're only as good as your next fight. So when you hear a young, up-and-coming, talented fighter say you're only as good as your next fight, what does Shannon Rich think of that analogy?
Man, I think that's the greatest answer I've ever heard. That kid has got it. He's got it. Good head on his shoulders right there. I like that. I'm actually going to use that. You're only as good as your next fight.
Yeah,
like
you know, I did too, bro. I got to tell you what, it kind of took me back for a second because, you know, to hear the humility of this kid. You know, I sit back and I look for young fighters that are coming up, young fighters that deserve to be on the show. And, you know, this kid truly did, man. And to have him on was tremendous because his analogies in life are that of, like, someone like you. They've got the mentality of a fighter that has truly been in the business a long time, yet he hasn't. You know, Shannon, if you had to look at the path that you've traveled and that you've walked and you truly have lived by, which aspect of Shannon Rich truly left the biggest mark on your soul?
Probably giving back to the kids and training the kids in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and being a role model, you know. I think that's probably where the biggest one is.
That's a tremendous aspect because that's, you know, I walked away from boxing after my homeboy died, Diego Chico Corrales. I shot his last fight here in Springfield, Missouri. And I got a phone call 3 days later that he was no longer with us. And I kind of walked away from the sport. And, you know, I came back slowly by shooting the Golden Gloves and for USA Boxing and American Boxing Association. And I found myself just dedicating all my time to the youth of the sport, you know, to overcome hurdles and obstacles. How hard is it for someone like yourself, Shannon, that's been in the sport so long but has seen so many people go? I mean, as far as passing, moving on to heaven and aspects, because I know you lost just as many friends as I have in the sport. So what does it mean to you to continue their legacy?
It means a lot. It means that they didn't do it in vain. They weren't in the sport for nothing. You know what I mean? So they're never forgotten. And one of them is Kevin Ramsey. You know, I took that pretty hard when he died. Charles Lewis, Mask from Tap Out. I took that really hard when Charles died. You know, just so that they didn't die in vain. You know what I mean? That their legacy is going to continue as well.
Yeah, you know, that's tremendous. You know, the thing that I respect most about you, and a lot of people probably will never understand this, it's your heart. It's what I see in people in the sport. You know, a lot of people just truly look at adversity and they turn their, like I said earlier, they turn their tail and run. Not in the life of Shannon Rich. When Shannon Rich sees adversity, in my opinion, it makes you work 1,000 times harder. What is it that was instilled in you from a young age, not just from the military, but as a young child in life, even being bullied, but what was it that instilled that never give up mentality?
I don't know if I can just say it was one thing. I think it was many people. I have a brother-in-law, Randy Martin. I mean, he's the one that taught me work ethic. You know, you don't call in sick, you bust your ass, and then, you know, whatever job you're doing, you do it as best you can. So, I mean, that's probably it right there.
Yeah, you know, Shannon, the thing that I'm finally glad to see you get justification, see you get this documentary, because, you know, every time I bring you on the show is something else. I mean, you know, even one aspect I don't think you even added to it, you know, is the wrestling aspect. You know, Shannon,
yeah.
you've done so many things. It's like, I look, like I said earlier, I look at your career and I feel like I haven't done crap. You know, how hard is it? And don't take this wrong, bro, because I'm older than you, but you're not that far behind, you know, behind me. But how hard is it for you to remain in peak performance and fight condition, being that, you know, you're beating fighters half your age when you do go into the cage or on the mat or, you know, bare knuckle boxing. So how hard is it for you to maintain that euthanism in Shannon Rich?
Man, you know, I credit it to not doing any drugs or drinking, you know, living a clean life and living in Arizona out there in this beautiful sun every day. You know, trying to stay away from those injuries, you know. I'm 48 years old in September. I don't know too many guys still fighting at 48. So, you know, the Lord has blessed me and I'm going to keep doing it as long as I can.
You know, you deep a little bit here and there, and you know the one question that I really want to know is, at the end of the day, when Shannon Rich looks in the mirror, who does Shannon Rich see?
Oh man, Shannon sees many guys, because you know I've lived so many lives, but you know I see a guy who's happy. You know, finally I'm happy in my life, so that's where I'm at right now. I'm happy.
That's a tremendous place to be, you know. Shit, I'm sitting at 52 years old, and I'm still going through menopause. I'm still trying to figure out life myself, man.
Right.
People don't realize you hit 50 years old, and everything you thought doesn't mean shit. I mean, I'll be quite honest with you, man. I thought I knew, you know. I thought I was a grown man. I hit 50, and I woke up the next morning and went, "What the hell?" And
yeah.
So now, you know, I'm trying to find, you know, my true calling in life and my true passion as I get older. You know, Shannon, this documentary is going to be tremendous. The attributes that you bring to the sport have been second to none. You know, I can't honestly, you know, when I saw that you were fighting at the O2 Arena, I was just stoked, because I know what it means. And, you know, you talk about it being the pinnacle. It's going to be the pinnacle of your career. You know, when you look at it in that aspect, putting a pinnacle on your career is kind of hard, considering you're a man of many hats, you know.
Right.
But, you know, when I heard the legend Jacob Stitch Duran explain that feeling of walking out in front of 50,000 to 80,000 people, you know, it's second to none. You know, when you sit back, you talk about it's the pinnacle, you know. I think it's just the beginning, man. I don't think an age is.
Well,
a number
just to
with
say,
you,
it's just one. It's just one of many. I mean, when I fought Frank Shamrock at the Bellagio for K1, when I fought Sakuraba in Pride, you know, 100,000 people, the live gate. I mean, there's been several big opportunities, big highlights in my life. This is just going to be one of those.
You know, the one thing that, you know, kind of I like to ask everybody, you know, it's like you've accomplished all this and you've done it time and time again. Do you feel that there's a certain aspect that Shannon Rich has always wanted to touch on but has yet to accomplish?
Well, I haven't gotten an Academy Award yet, and, you know, that's coming. Seriously, you know, the acting is there. But next for me, man, is probably, you know, I'm trying to get on the singing tour. When I'm 50, I want to play golf professionally. I want to be the only guy out there with a mohawk and kind of Happy Gilmore it out there. Seriously, I love golf. I'm getting really good at it, and that's what I want to do next. I want to be a professional golfer.
Man, I could see it happening because, you know, there's nothing that you haven't put your hands in that truly means something. You know, Shannon, I know there's a long list of people in life that you want to thank, and I'm going to let you get back to your golf here in a second. But sometimes on my show, I think people don't pay respect to those in life that have helped them get there. And I like to give those types of opportunities. You know, the other day I did a post on my page that said, you know, don't forget those that believed in you.
Right. Did I lose you?
And back you to this day. What would that statement be?
Oh, man. Man, there's a lot of things I could say at this point. You know, there's a saying that you can say is it's nice to be important, but most of all, it's important to be nice, and that's probably what I like to go by.
Amen to that. You know, Shannon, I'm going to toss the mic to you as usual. I'm going to let you get back to your day. First and foremost, I want to thank you for honoring my show. I can't wait for this documentary. I can't wait for you to fight in the O2 arena. My friend, I'm going to hand the mic to you. If there's any sponsors, any friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours.
You know, big shout out to, like I said, Joe Mack for going to corner me and be there for me in the O2 arena in London. Got special thanks to my wife, man. Dude, I got the best wife in the world. She's my best friend, and she's a flight attendant for Southwest Airlines and, you know, helps me get around the world. And, you know, she takes care of me. So if it wasn't for her, man, I wouldn't be able to live the dream I'm living. So I definitely appreciate her. Laura's, she's an amazing woman. And, you know, if it wasn't for my brother-in-law, Randy, he's the one that pretty much taught me to become a man. And learn to stick up for myself and fight. So if it wasn't for him, and, you know, obviously Carlos Machado, RCJ Machado Jiu-Jitsu, I mean, that's where it all started. So big shout out for all those guys, you know, and just all the MMA fans that love MMA. You know, you don't even got to love me, man. Just love MMA. Love the sport. Keep the sport alive. Keep it growing.
Most definitely. You know, as always, my brother, it was truly an honor. You enjoy that incredible sun and quit teasing me with the pictures as I'm stuck here in the Midwest in some cold, ugly-ass weather. You have a tremendous day, brother. I look forward to the next time you come on, and you have a tremendous day, my friend.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, Shannon. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Shannon Rich, man. The dude is just off the hook. Crazy. You know, you got to love him, man. He's done everything that you could possibly do in the sport and under the sun. With that being said, we're going to move on to our next part of the show. We're going to take a brief intermission, and we'll come back with a Misfits of Gold weekly special. As soon as I can get my stupid commercial uploaded in. For some reason, we are not live anymore, so...
What up, it's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out, though. Listen. in a world full of followers. Be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm going to ask you this, though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout-out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
And we're back. We're going to go ahead and give MF Beck a call. Misfits of Gold in the house. I'm going to try to fix this and see why we're not live.
What up, gangster?
What's up, homies? You know, been a crazy day, man, and we're just glad to get you back on here. Last week was a little hectic. This week is even that much more hectic, but we're going to make things happen. How you all been over there in California?
Shit, it rained out, man, but doing well. Good to be back. It's been good to have you back.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy, man, and you know, I'm transparent in life, so I don't know what's going on with my studio, but we'll keep things going as long as it allows us to. I don't know what's happening with it. It's kind of freaking out on me, but we're on here and we're good to go. So is Travis on here with us?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know, I got to be quite honest with you, man. The first thing I kind of want to start off today with, it kind of perturbs me a little bit, you know. First and foremost, where does the society aspect get this affirmation and feeling the right to be able to post about our president's sex life? You know, first and foremost, I'm going to speak from my opinion as a 52-year-old man. I could give two shits about any president's sex life. But with Donald Trump, I honestly don't even want to hear about it. You know, what is it that has somebody in, so, you know, everybody's so intrigued with an aspect that doesn't even fucking matter in life.
All righty. I got to say that I absolutely agree with you, Don. And that's why I think it's funny, you know, it kind of seems like at this point people are grasping at straws. I mean, he's currently married to a porn star. You think he hasn't fucked around with porn stars before? This is a 60-year-old man. And let's also not, you know, look past the fact that if you want to go back in history, I mean, go back to JFK, man. He was one of the biggest fucking playboys in history. And at that time, you know, the presidents almost had an agreement with the media to where the media, everyone knew that, you know, JFK was fucking around. But it wasn't as much of a big deal, you know. I think we have, it's kind of just this weird leftover, you know, Puritan Christian values that people are still pushing on it, where they're trying to dictate, you know, something like your sex life. But that's just why I think it's funny, is because I think with a guy like Donald Trump, any other president, yes, it would be a huge deal. But Donald Trump breaks the rules of all of those, and I think, you know, it's kind of what we expect. And just like you said, man, it's really not a big deal. I care about who's doing a good job running the country and who's helping people. I don't give a shit who the president puts his dick inside of.
But it's not just, you know, like the Christian value people. It's a lot of people that just don't like him, so they're trying to nitpick and find any fucking excuse or reason or, you know, rhyme doesn't fucking matter to try and, you know, downplay or degrade the guy. So they're going to just look for anything they can. It's just like people being in a bad relationship, you know what I mean? You're going to nitpick at the fucking toilet seat not being down, and that's enough to end your marriage. And it's like, but that's what people are doing. They don't like the guy, so they're trying to find any fucking reason they can. Just like if anybody doesn't like somebody else, they're going to find any reason they can to fucking, you know, look down on them or find a reason to hate them. Either that or they hate that little bit of inside themselves, and so they pretty much project it because he signifies or fucking, what would be the word?
Exemplify.
Yeah. Thank you. They would exemplify, you know, like, their hatred in themselves, and he's doing the exact same thing. So I don't know, dude. It could go a lot of different ways, but either way, it's social media.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, me and UMF, we kind of touched on something a little bit earlier, and I got to be quite honest with you. I didn't think about it and put it into the relevance that you did. You know, here I'm forced because of my medical situation to get these flu shots each and every year. This year they happen to make me get two of them. And, you know, here I am still. We talked about it earlier. I've been sick all winter long. You know, and you know, I look at other people posting, don't get these shots, don't get these shots. And I'm not going to mention any names here, but I happen to know a person that their child got the, I think it was a chickenpox or smallpox immunization, only to have a stroke. Do you think, and this was at 9 years of age, so do you think that, you know, something is systematically being done in the immunization process? I mean, I look at videos of kids that were perfectly healthy, and I'm talking babies, you know, up to whatever age to go to school, perfectly healthy, they get immunized, and next thing you know, they've got life-threatening illnesses. What do you think is correlated through that aspect?
You know, we're going to sound like a broken record on this one, but it's you follow the money, dude. Like, there's already been some kind of word that's floated around in the wind that the government was paying all these different doctors to pretty much test out these drugs on the public, you know what I mean? So it was like, okay, we're going to collect this gigantic check, and we're just going to, you know, inject these people with this particular fucking virus. We're going to say it's the influenza virus, but it could be, you know, like a mutated version, because, I mean, isn't that what it fucking is in the first place? It's just a mutated fucking virus just over time.
Or a dead virus.
A dead virus. What, well, I don't fuck it up. But dude, it's just like people are getting paid to infect these people, because think about it, the health industry doesn't make money off you being healthy. Let's keep that shit real fucking gangster. And coming from, like, a trainer side, like, even on that side of the fucking spectrum, like, I CalFit, dude, fucking 24-hour, like, those trainers are pretty much made to go in there and teach you to be dependent on them to where you will constantly need their services. So it kind of, it contradicts what the fuck they're talking about, you know what I mean? Like, we're trying to get these people to the point where they can go work out on their own without actually needing us, but the health industry doesn't make money like that. A lot of these, you know, higher-ups don't, you know, make money. But at the same time, I don't think that all vaccinations are bad. You know, like, there's some when we were kids, like the fucking tuberculosis and
polio,
like, those ones, like, I can understand that, you know what I mean, like, to a certain extent, but it's like, the flu, for real? Like, I think I haven't gotten a flu shot in fucking years, dude. It's been, like, at least a good 10 years since I've been fucking hacked out, so it, I don't know. It is what it is. It's like, if you take care of your body, just eat right for the most part, you know, kind of lay off all the fucking sedatives and all the different fucking drugs that are, you know, pretty much like putting a Band-Aid on. It's not really fucking helping you or healing you.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree, because, you know, here I look at my own situation, and I find myself still, you know, spending more and more money. I mean, it works out in both ways. You talk about the money trail, because here I've been hospitalized, and I've been back to the hospital multiple times since trying to figure out what the hell is going on. So, I mean, not only did they gain money in that aspect from the shots, but then now they're gaining my money in the aspect that I've been having to be hospitalized and go to urgent care, the emergency room, and yet I still sit here not feeling 100%. And, you know, the pharmaceutical companies gain from that too, because I have to purchase medicine each and every time. So, you know, it's a three-for-one deal. I'm pretty well getting screwed, you know.
Right, the motherfuckers are triple-dipping.
Yeah, right? You know, well, you know, most people really don't understand how out of control the problem is. You know, I was in the hospital one time, and mind you, this was probably 7 years ago, and I asked for a couple of aspirin, and I got
$20.
On the hospital. $80, bro, for two.
Damn! I thought California was bad.
And you know, I've been to fucking Thailand, man. Last time I was in Thailand, my buddy Thomas Smash Fallon, you know, he fucking tore out, crashed his moped on the last day or the day before we were about to leave. And he tore out his AC joint, tore his collarbone completely away from his shoulder, man. We were in and out of the Thai hospital in 26 minutes, x-rays, two different prescriptions in hand, completely patched up, you know, everything we fucking needed for, I think it was $43. I mean, it's ridiculous that we have, you know, we're fucking America. We're the most technologically advanced. We're supposed to be, you know, the best country in the world. Yet you look at things like our healthcare system, and it's the most expensive and damn near least effective of all the countries. And we have third world countries out there who have a better healthcare system than we have.
Yeah, it's pathetic. It truly is. You know, I talk to some of my brothers overseas and in Canada, and it's a joke. The American medical system is a complete joke. You know, I did a show last week with a fighter named Vince Murdoch. You know, and you know, because you brought up Thailand, so it kind of reflected a thought in my head. You know, this is just to be point blank honest with some of these fighters out there. You know, be careful what you sign up for. You look at Vince Murdoch, he was under Amir Khan, MTV India, went out there for the Super Fight League and pretty much was being held hostage, was being forced to stay in his room, wasn't allowed to talk, was being charged monies for his room and food and everything, to the point that he didn't make any money when he wanted to leave, but the fact is they wouldn't let him leave when he wanted to leave. It took Uriah Faber and several other people to get them to, you know, give him back his passport and all his aspects to allow him to come back to the United States. You know, when you look at it, do you think that Americans take other cultures, you know, and look at them and pretty much don't assume anything different than they do in our own? And do you think that it could be a hindrance for certain aspects of the sport or people just in life in general?
Absolutely. You know, people take for granted, you know, the type of freedom that we have here in America. They try to act like, you know, it's bad times and this and this and this, but they don't understand where, you know, different sides of the world, like how they operate, like how the systems work. And let on that, like how much they actually fucking hate Americans. Let's keep that shit fucking real. But it's at the same time, it's kind of like neglect on anybody that wants to travel's part. You know, it's like, you want to go to a different country, different culture, I think it'd be a little wise to understand their laws, you know, how the shit works, like the rule of thumb, you know, as in Rome, do as the fucking Romans, I don't know, but do some kind of fucking research and understand what you're getting into. You know, we had talked about fucking different organizations before, and it's like, there's possibility that they're ran by fucking mob of those particular fucking countries. If it's entertainment, there's most likely gambling. Not, you know, like we were just in fucking Minnesota and there's no gaming commission. You know what I mean? So they can pretty much fucking rack up whatever they want in the casinos. They can make them as difficult as fucking possible. So people take for granted like the provisions that we have in place where corruption like that doesn't necessarily fucking happen. I mean, it'll still happen to some fucking degree, but not to the point where we're going to keep somebody from fucking Brazil or somebody from Japan or somebody from fucking Eastern Europe, keep them over here, you know, just to fucking exploit them and be like, no, you're not going home. You're going to do what the fuck we tell you to do. But it's crazy just how different parts of the world are, just how things are fucking ran. And as Americans, we think our shit don't fucking stink. So we go over there trying to act like Americans, and it's like, hey, yeah, guess what? Now American law ain't got nothing to do with it. Like, I got a homegirl who's fucking stuck in Thailand right now because she found some money on the street, you know, just happened to be American dollars, right? And tried to turn that shit in, and guess what? Yeah, now they're looking at plenty of fucking time because, you know, in Thailand it's illegal to fucking spend money that you found. Like, you're supposed to turn that shit in to police. But had they fucking known that prior, you know, if it really was the situation, I don't know, it could be a speculation. I don't fucking know. But anyway, you know, if you understand the laws, you're less likely to get in trouble. If you understand the corruption is possible, you're probably less likely to get fucking caught up in the screwball shit. But just to think that the world isn't evil, you're just setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, you truly are. You know, people what was that movie, Midnight on the Orient Express? I mean, go back and watch that, and you'll get a better understanding of life, you know, and what it's like
right.
In a third world country. You know, something happened to me today that... after the show, actually, I'm going to have to go to the emergency room. I went to McDonald's today, and yeah, I already know what's going to come from UMF, but...
Well, you kind of just said it. You're going to go to the emergency room, and you have McDonald's, and it's just like, I get it. I don't got to rub it in. I mean, McDonald's is already salty enough.
All I did was go to get a cup of coffee, and...
You didn't get no breakfast sandwich?
No. I didn't, you know, but the gentleman handed me the coffee, and I went to grab for it, and the lid wasn't on correctly, and it burnt the shit out of me, to be quite honest with you, to the point that I dropped a cup of coffee, and I looked at the dude, and I said, what the hell, bro? I said, you didn't even put the lid on. You know, he turned around and looked at me and said, fuck you. I said, excuse me? I said, but fuck you, bro. I said, you know what? Matter of fact, why don't you get a manager? So he slams the window. This manager comes back to the thing and says, I don't appreciate you cussing at my employee. I said, well, first and foremost, your employee cussed at me. I said, you know, he handed me a cup without the lid on. I burnt the hell out of my hand. It's blistered. I said, you know, he goes, you know what? Why don't you just leave and never come back?
Yeah, how about I just call you fucking regional? How about you like that guy? Now you're about to be really upset.
Well, I turned around and I looked at him. I said, bro, are you serious? He said, yeah, get the fuck out of here. And I said, you know what, bro? I said, fuck you. I said, you're just as lame as your employee. I said, the bottom line is, I said, your employee was incompetent, didn't put the lid on because you're on a little timer. I said, and because of that, I got burned, and you don't give a shit. He said, I said, get the fuck out of here.
Well, isn't that the reason why fucking coffee lids have hot on them? Because that fucking old lady got burnt by McDonald's and fucking sued the shit out of them?
Yeah.
Like, didn't McDonald's get sued for that shit?
Yeah, but here's the – well, that's why it's called McCafe now. It's not McDonald's coffee anymore. They found a loophole in the system. But here's the thing that caught my attention and really threw me back. I told the dude, I said, you know what? You don't have to be disrespectful. I said, but the thing of it is – I said, I will be calling corporate and letting them know what happened. And he looked at me, and he acted like he was going to hit me. And so I stuck my head out the window because my car was too close to the building to get out, of course. But I stuck my head out the window, and I said, go ahead, bitch, make my day. And, you know, and he acted like he was going to hit me, and I didn't flinch. And I said, what, bro? I said, I got all day. I'll sit here all day. And, you know, he basically slammed the window and walked away. You know, I look at the ideology and the thoughts of people that are in the workforce today, and I don't mean to demean anybody that truly is out there giving 100%, but I look at the aspects of what you get nowadays as far as customer service and those kind of variables in that aspect, and it's truly gone. It's non-existent. So when you look at what transpired in my life today, and you see it all across America, what do you think is happening to the workforce, and how long do you think it's going to take before we're not number one? I don't even think we're number one anymore anyway. I mean, but how long do you think it's going to take before other countries with customer service qualities and that truly care are going to take the American market?
I mean, man, if you look at some industries, they already have as far as, like, you know, telemarketing. Or, you know, you call up AT&T or fucking Verizon, man, and you're getting a call center in India. You know, and it just comes down to the fact that, you know, I've seen it just as well. It's penetrating all aspects of society, you know. People are able to hide behind this McDonald's logo, and there's this diffusion of responsibility to where nobody has any fucking accountability whatsoever for their actions, you know. And the PC culture is so strong that because you work at McDonald's and you can hide behind this corporation, you know, you're no longer accountable for any of the actions that are around you, you know. And I mean, scale it up, you know, you can go to the fucking pharmaceutical companies who are killing 500,000 people a year, you know, making their drugs, but there's no accountability for that. You know, cigarette companies and alcohol companies, it's the same exact thing. You know, it's all again, like we always say, just following the fucking money. And then you get into the actual aspect of, you know, like you're encountering, Don. I mean, you know, you look at California, man, we just raised the fucking the minimum wage to $15 an hour. So not only are you getting that kind of reduced customer service, you know, in a few years that guy's going to be making $15 an hour doing the same shit he is and having a robot who's actually taking the orders from it, man. So it comes down to, you know, like we're saying, man, this, me and MF were talking about this just the other day, you know, it's like our entire system, whether it's the education system, the healthcare system, the government system, we've skewed it in a way where it seems like we would rather it be set up for you know, weakness, for a lack of a better term. You know, it's set up to be coddled and for everyone to, you know, one guy shits their pants and everybody's got to wear diapers. You know, one guy blows his hand up with fucking fireworks and now nobody gets fireworks anymore. You know, rather than changing our society where we focus on education and making our society strong, making our children strong and smart and able to think logically and reasonably, you know, we got to change our ideals and we got to set up all these systems to where
you know, they reward honor and they reward honesty. They reward hard work. And we've just gotten away from that, man, you know. Since when did it become, Don, that hard work and, you know, accepting yourself and your situation for what it is, you know, how did that become an old school idea? How did we get so far away from that?
Yeah, it blows my mind because I just look at life as it's losing a lot of aspects that I grew up to. You know, I look at people, so you know, post on social media. You know, I look at all these the irrelevant posts that truly don't mean anything in life. You know, and it's like, is our life moving forward based off of falsities, based off of social media? You know, I look at things kind of crazy because, you know, fuck. You know, I was there when color TV was invented, so, I mean, I have a right to say this, but, you know, I agree with MF that social media is a much-needed platform, but I don't think it should have been put in the hands of the public. But, you know, unfortunately, it has. Now you see everybody dispersing their views, dispersing their thoughts politically about life and this and that. And what I see evolving is a revolution of hatred. When you look at social media, do you feel that a revolutionary of hatred, you know, towards each other is being created and demised as we speak?
Well, yeah, honestly, I think it's always been there. I think there's always been some kind of struggle for control, some kind of power, you know, power battle, power struggle, whatever you want to call it. It's just right now, as humans, we already instinctively and, you know, innately have ingrained in our system the tribalism effect, you know what I mean? It's just kind of the way it works. Not everybody's going to think the same. Not everybody's going to operate the same. Not everybody's ideologies or, you know, ways of life are going to mesh and blend together. So America, like, when you think about it, it's kind of like a huge experiment, you know, like, how can it work? Can it work? Can we do this? Some people believe it can. I still believe there's hope, but I'm starting to lose that hope. And it's when you get social media, it's a way for complete strangers to engage in conversation, which, you know, is like a good sword, it cuts two ways. So, yeah, it could be a very good thing, but it can also be a very bad thing. Because now these people, it's either you can find a way to get to understand each other better, or you can find a way to better argue. And it just seems like everybody wants to prove their point on that their way of life is correct, that their way of life is correct. So social media gives you an opportunity to cast out your opinion to thousands and millions of people. And then you get the thin-shelled motherfuckers that it's like, okay, I'm gonna air my laundry out on social media. I'm sure you see this all the time, Don, because I do too. People air their fucking bullshit out on social media, and then some people jump on, they either cater to them, they coddle to them, or they just flat out tell them that they're full of shit and shut the fuck up. And next thing you know, these people go off and fucking kill themselves. You know, bless their hearts, like anybody in the family that had to go through some shit like that. But this is serious shit. And it's like people are already kind of, what would you say, not weak, but fragile with their emotions and with their egos as it is, because social media is a projection of that false ego. It's of everything that they want to be. So when somebody challenges that and they really have no basis or no way to really combat that, it creates this wedge between people that's even more now, because besides just having like an identity wedge, now there's an emotional wedge, there's a spiritual wedge, then it's just the more division that is created, it's like people are imploding because we need that natural human contact, and because people can't have it because they think that they can't get along with anybody that doesn't feel or believe the same way they do. It's just, I don't think humans were ready for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with you. You know, I agree with you 100%. You know, there was something that I seen the other day that just, I don't know, it sickened me, man. And they're Americans, even though they're of Mexican heritage, but they're Americans, and they get up every morning, and I think there was like four or five of them in this group that get up every morning at 4 a.m. to go stand on the street corner, you know, in hopes that, you know, somebody would come by and give them a day's worth of work, you know, just trying to earn an honest dollar, you know, an honest living. And out of the blue, I think it was 9, 10, or 11 individuals came and beat the holy shit out of them and left one individual really severely injured. I think they cut his throat. They broke his orbitals. They knocked out three or four of his teeth. You know, what is it about people in today's society that they feel that they just have the right to go and destroy somebody else's life? God-fearing people, people who are honestly giving back to society, and then you got individuals that go and do something like this. When you guys look at it, because you guys are younger than me, when you look at that aspect and how that situation perplexed, you know, where are we going to be 5, 10 years from now?
Well, hold on, I had to hit it for this one. Travis and I were just talking about this, and I'm super happy that you even brought that up. There's, I think, 10 or 12 different types of propaganda, right? And every type of propaganda is meant to create a wedge. Or, like, look at, okay, during war times, somebody's going to go beat up some worker that's just standing out in front of a fucking Home Depot trying to get some fucking work. You know, they're going to do, like, supreme damage to the person, like extreme bodily damage, you know? But when you look at it, it's all fucking propaganda. It's just right now it has nothing to do with war. It's that people are getting demonized against other people. You know, like black people are getting demonized, you know, in front of white people. White people are being demonized in front of any type of minority that there is. The Mexicans are getting demonized because people are afraid of the fucking borders and everything else. But long story short, dude, it's propaganda that, because of social media, once again, is specifically pointed out to each demographic of people that's getting fed different types of propaganda, more like a individualistic propaganda. You know, I mean, rather than catering to the masses, they cater to the individual now, to where all these different groups of people are being demonized against the other, and nobody really fucking can see the fact that that's what's happening. Like, you almost feel bad for it. You know what I mean? Like, there's fear ploys that are getting put out there. There's sympathy ploys. You know, there's anger ploys. There's greed ploys. There's fucking lust ploys. You know, there's all types of propaganda through TV, through fucking media, through the radio. It doesn't matter what it is. People are being fed propaganda on, like, a subconscious level. You know, whether they go home to watch TV or whether they're being told to hate this person. Like, how many sports teams hate the other teams? Why? Because they were fucking brought up to hate it. How many religions hate other fucking religions? Why? Because they were fucking brought up to hate it. How many people hate religions? Why? Because they were brought up to fucking hate it. It's all propaganda, dude. And until people can actually see the fact that that's really what's being projected out there, that's why you need to stay the fuck off TV, stay the fuck off social media, stay away from the propaganda, and maybe, just maybe, you'll be able to see what the fuck is actually happening. That's why that poor soul that got the shit beat out of him, that's why that fucking happened, because these people were told that he was a fucking demon, that he was wrong, that he was evil, that he was a leech, that he was this. People were fucking told that, and they believed it, and so they went out there and fucking did it. You know what I mean? And you look at these fucking kids that are going up shooting up these fucking schools. Some narrative doesn't fucking happen because some guy got fucking shot. Let's not fucking, you know, fall away from the fact that a child went to shoot up other fucking children. What the fuck? And nobody wants to take care of that. Like, oh, well, fucking, you know, we're going to walk out of school and fucking protest this shit. Yeah, how many of you motherfuckers stuffed that kid in his locker? How many of you motherfuckers didn't pay attention to him? How many of you watched him get the shit beat out of their teeth and nobody wants to step in and fucking do some shit? Nobody wants to take responsibility. And then you add the propaganda and the fucking lack of responsibility, dude, and here we have this fucking disaster. We had this nightmare where it's, now you got the weak that are trying to act strong, where eventually nature's going to find a way, dude, and it's going to be fucking brutal. Yeah, at least that's how I fucking kind of see it, because the floods ain't coming. I think it's going to be man that takes itself out.
You know, I can truly see that happening. You know, one thing to my listeners on iHeart and Univision, one thing you got to understand, this show is totally off topic. It's our views and the way we just want to discuss life. And, you know, I appreciate if you call in or listen. You know, it truly means the world to me, and the more downloads we get, the more plays we get during the following week. But, you know, we share a real on here, and that's one aspect that I'm truly finding out to find it actually be hard to find real in life anymore. You see all these people calling themselves calling themselves public figures. You see all these people that, you know, portray themselves. How much of a delusion is that aspect of social media in the demented people's minds in our society? You know, people fail to realize that, you know, they think that we've got mental hospitals, but they don't realize that probably 93% of the mentally ill are still walking the streets. They still have abilities to function, use social media. How much of a hindrance would you say that is portrayed through social media with people that truly are mentally ill, but have the, you know, are allowed the capabilities of posting on social media and rendering their thoughts?
I mean, man, what's scary to me is it's like we've gotten into this position where it's like what defines mental illness, you know? I've heard so many people try and argue that, you know, so many of these school shooters, oh, they're not mentally ill, oh, they're not mentally ill. Well, then why the fuck are they all on psych drugs? You know, what qualifies you as mentally ill if it's not that you're on an antipsychotic drug? I mean, I found out something today the other day that blew my fucking mind. Did you know that the number one prescribed pill in America is Abilify? What Abilify does
is if your antidepressant or antipsychotic isn't working good enough, they give you Abilify, another antipsychotic, as a stack for the antipsychotics you're already on to make you better. And that is the number one prescribed pill in America. Now, if that doesn't show us that we have 78 million Americans or whatever the fuck the number is that have a fucking mental health problem, I mean, I think the number two prescribed pill in America is Lunesta for people who just have to take a tranquilizer every night to shut off, you know? I mean, we're in this position where it's like nobody wants to define what the fuck we're actually talking about, and at the same time, both sides are trying to just shut down fucking speech and shut down discussion and debate because it doesn't agree with their side, and that's the only way we're going to find out, you know.
With their pocket.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I mean, man, you know, I personally think that there are way more people in this country that are mentally ill than, you know, we even know. And, I mean, I'm like one of those people who, you know, I am for everybody having a gun. I think Texas is a great example of it. If, you know, a well-armed society is a polite society. But at the same time, you know, I also think that, yes, it should be a lot harder to get a gun. You should have to go through a lot more background checks. You should have to, just like when you drive a car and you have to go through, you know, 6 months of driver's training and show that you know how to drive that vehicle and operate it, it should be the same thing with a gun. You should have to show that you can use it, clean it, that you know everything about it, that you're skilled with it. You know, so, I mean, the big...
What about them crates in the fucking hoods of guns? For some reason, military-grade weapons got on a fucking hood. Ain't nothing about people buying the shit.
I mean, it happened.
Yeah, how the fuck did they get military-grade weapons? Who dropped them off? They didn't break into no fucking compound and steal them, bitches.
That's true. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, and it's the same thing, though. I mean, you look at the Middle East, man, and, you know, what's scary about that is ISIS is using American-made weapons. I hate to tell you, but America's number one export is guns. You know, we are the gun makers, and yet we are the gun makers with all the guns in the world, yet we have a society that is so completely removed and you know, what is the word?
Detached.
Detached from the actual reality of the situation around them.
Yeah. You know, I have to agree with you because, you know, going back to a show I did with Pat Miletich, you know, that at the time I had him on, the day I had him on, actually, they exposed that the American government was doing arms deal with Bulgaria to get guns to the Middle East. And, you know, at first I was like, you know, that's just, you know, conspiracy theory, propaganda, or whatever. And then 2 weeks later, here it is on the world news, you know, that it was exposed. And, you know, so you look at it. You know, I think it's a lot like both of you say. You know, the government does a lot behind closed doors. The government is never going to allow us to know the full aspect of what goes on in the daily, you know, even though our lives, you know, matter in this aspect. Because ultimately what we're doing is creating an effect, a 360. You know, we're you know, the government says that they're taking care of issues. They say that we're winning the war in Afghanistan. We're doing this and that. When in reality, it's a war that is truly self-funded by our own government. I mean, and a lot of people could hate me for that statement, but if you truly go and look at the facts, look at the documentation, the government is supplying arms to people that we're fighting against. So how is that not a government-funded event or function?
I mean, and this goes all the way back to the 70s, man, with Ollie North and Rick Ross and the whole Iran-Contra deal. You know, this isn't the fucking first time this has happened at all. You know, you look at things like the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which basically got us into Vietnam. That was just made up. There was no ship that was attacked. There was no nothing. That was the absolute epitome of what you would call a false flag that has happened before, yet everyone wants to remain blind to the fact. I mean... One of the things the other day, too, that I had forgotten somehow, but I remembered, and nobody seems to realize anymore, if you go back to the 1940s, we had concentration camps in America. You know, when we went to war with Japan, American government went around and rounded up everyone that was fucking Asian and went and put them into camps. You know, this is not a long time ago at all. And people are so, you know, coddled, especially in this country, man, that everyone thinks it's so safe and that there isn't true evil out there. You know, I love the expression, I would always prefer to be a warrior in the garden than a gardener in the war.
Yeah, but that goes like you'd be giving Gentiles way too much credit, too.
Amen.
Oh, yeah, we had that talk earlier, Don. This motherfucker, like, he was like, man, I think I give people just too much credit. I was like, yeah, you're probably starting to fucking realize that. Like, some people just, you know, either they don't want to know the truth, they don't want to see that it's real, you know, because they're too comfortable in their fucking lives, whatever it is. I don't know, man. There's just so much fucking bullshit. This world's always been the fucking same. I think we're just seeing it for our generation, just add a new fucking twist with the internet.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You know, I think now that we've got more, I guess, paths to look at things, it allows us to, you know, uncover things that we were never able to see before. And even though documents become unclassified, you know, 99% of them are blackened out. So what's the sense of even declassifying them if you can't read what the hell they are to begin with? You know, how to give you a clue that something's fucked up, you know, from the get. You know, I don't know, man. I just look at life and I see from where I was as a kid to now, just life has just totally gotten fucked up, and I don't see any fixing it. I honestly don't. You know, you got these cars the other day. The first self-driven car actually killed somebody. Who in the fucking right mind is?
I'm not laughing as a motherfucker dying, but that shit. I mean, come on. Come on now.
Who is
gonna, nobody saw that shit coming?
Yeah, I mean, I saw it coming right off the get. When I first seen it, it's the first thing we said, that'll last till the first person gets killed. Well, it's already happened.
Right.
So, I mean, it didn't even take 2 weeks. I mean, so what are your thoughts on should we allow that in society, and why wasn't it put up for vote? Because, I mean, we're walking the streets. We're people, you know, we got family members out on the streets. Why wasn't it put up as an option for us to decide if we want vehicles that aren't going to be driven by human beings but calculated by computers?
One, it was never our choice to decide. We only have this, in this great country, there's this illusion of freedom of choice. No, we only have a freedom of choice in the options that are put in front of us. And some of these options are deemed that only the government should have control, only these companies should have control. Why? Because the Gentiles are inferior. They don't understand the technology. They don't understand the capabilities and the good that it could do fucking mankind. So we're going to fucking, you know, try and do all this to make people's lives easier. But no, we're not trying to make people's lives easier. We're trying to make people more dependent on technology, the government, everything else. People are being less reliant on themselves, you know what I mean, less independent. And so you throw those two factors in there, you have this technology has made life easier for people. So there's no need to get better. There's no need to grow. That mixed in with fucking, you know, kids, ever since the 2000s, they were always told, you know, you're good the way you are. Accept yourself the way that you are. That is a dangerous fucking ideology to fucking teach children, because now you're telling them that it's okay for them to be assholes. It's okay for them to be this way. It's okay for them to fucking, you know, go off and start punching people, shooting them in the fucking face. You know, you're subconsciously telling those kids that it's okay for them to fucking do that because it's okay to be themselves. But then on top of that, you're taking away their natural ability to grow because you're telling them that they're perfect the way they are. That is fucking stupid. Stupid, 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 stupid. And now you get these fucking kids, and it's scary because they're going to be making decisions in the next fucking 20 years on where this fucking country is going. And the only hope we have of actually saving this shit, it's going to take twice as long as it was to fucking screw everything up. It's going to be the young, young kids. If they can get away from social media, they can get away from TV, if they can get away from sport, not sports, but like professional fucking entertainment sports. You know what I mean? Why watch the shit when you can actually fucking do it? But anyway, it's like if you can get away from all that, maybe these kids have a fucking, you know, a chance, like a snowball chance in hell, but hey, it's a fucking chance.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. You know, I hate to be the burden of bad news, but I just got a message from my station. The reason I'm having technical difficulties today is because I guess they are having technical difficulties across the board, and they're going to do a system restructure. So before we get cut off, because it's telling me that, you know, I need to end my episode, before we get cut off, you know, I'm going to toss the mic to Travis Hyland and let him give his final thoughts, and then we'll jump to you, MF, for your MF's thought of the week.
We'll keep it nice and short, man. I saw a badass documentary on YouTube the other day called The Reality of Truth, and it actually stars the chick from Fast and the Furious, Michelle Rodriguez. She goes down to Peru and goes for an 11-day ayahuasca and San Pedro ceremony. You know, so I thought that was really fucking badass. It had a lot of, you know, a lot of really, really cool shit into it. So check it out. It's only like an hour long on YouTube called The Reality of Truth. And, I mean, everyone knows what a big proponent I am of plant medicines. And for anyone who doesn't believe it, MAPS.org, that's MAPS.org. They're the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. You know, they're the ones who are doing all the research on PTSD, MDMA for PTSD, psilocybin for end of life, you know, so everyone check that shit out. Awesome.
Most definitely. MF, your thought of the week?
Thought of the week is exactly what I was talking with Travis about and what we just kind of touched on the radio show. If anybody listening, you know, if you got some free time, whatever it is, go and look up how many different types of propaganda there are and how they're used. And don't just look it up on one particular source. Find at least 10 sources. Because then you'll be able to kind of discern the answer for yourself. But to act like it's not out there and that it doesn't exist, you know, I'm not saying that you're going to use the shit or that's evil or whatever it is, but look up the types of propaganda and how they're used, and maybe it'll just help, it'll better defend you against the bad shit and how things are being controlled.
Most definitely. I like that. You know, as always, my brothers, it's truly been an honor to have you on the show. I apologize for last week. I didn't realize I was going to have an artist hit me and do his new album drop on his mother's birthday, and he wanted to do it on the show. And you know, that's just kind of
weird. I just made us miss you more.
Yeah, right. You know,
you had that pretty little haircut. I had to admire it.
Hey, for the first time, I get a compliment. You know, that's something.
Hey, I complimented you earlier, motherfucker. That's actually the second time. We're turning over a new leaf around here, Don.
But on that note, man, I want to thank you guys for joining the show. I truly appreciate you. They're telling me I got 32 seconds before they do a system shutdown. On that note, much love, my brothers. Till next week, peace.
Peace, later.
Oh, it was an honor and a privilege to have them on today. I tell you what, you know, life is grand. I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, the86ers.net, Alfred and Freddie, Cutmen for Hire, Bite Me Mouthguards, the United Way Merced, and I don't believe I'm forgetting anybody. On that note, thank you and God bless.